Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar, broadcasting from my home studio. Coming up later in the program, we hear the story of how the state had an aggressive plan to battle the coronavirus in nursing homes, but reportedly didn't implement it until after many residents had gotten sick or even died. But up front, we are witnessing history in Pennsylvania. Several counties have decided to defy Governor Tom Wolf's most stringent level of mitigation against the virus that causes COVID-19 and move themselves into one stage below that allows for more businesses to open and residents of those counties to move about more freely. Among the counties that say they will go from the red level to the yellow stage are Lancaster, Dauphin, Lebanon, and Franklin. District attorneys and a few others say they won't prosecute violators of the stay-at-home orders. Governor Wolf responded angrily yesterday and raised the specter of repercussions against those counties. There are dozens of people we could have talked to who support the move from red to yellow, but we're joined by Republican State Senator Scott Martin of Lancaster County, a former county commissioner himself. He was one of 13 elected officials who signed a letter to the governor signifying their intentions to go yellow. Senator Martin, welcome to the program.
Great to be here, Scott. It's always a pleasure.
If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or a comment on WITF's Facebook page. On Twitter, we are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. So just for context's sake, Senator, what are the reasons that you support moving Lancaster County to the yellow stage?
There's a lot of reasons, Scott. First and foremost, our county has always had a wonderful partnership in collaborating and pulling together. As a matter of fact, right from the get-go, local parties, whether it was the healthcare systems, the county, the economic development company, the Chamber of Commerce, all were working together to create a plan for moving forward, a structure and a framework. Of course, we received a direct allocation from the federal government of about $95.2 million to help implement and respond to COVID-19 in our communities. But a little more than that, it's been very difficult to collaborate with the administration throughout this, which for those of us who have ever been involved in emergency management, pretty much across the country, the locals are the frontline decision makers. That historically has been the case. And the FEMAs and the PEMAs of the world, their job is to bring resources, to move equipment. And so this has kind of been flipped on its head and I think has led to the difficulty trying to manage the emergency just from a centralized point in Harrisburg. What was really frustrating as we came down the stretch looking at what was opening is two important things. One is the metric that the administration had chosen, which was the 50 new cases over a two-week period out of 100,000 people. There were counties that were hitting the metric, were below it, and still were left to be closed. We kept trying to push for what was the science behind the metric, but when you combine that with the late night Thursday talk of keeping us closed to June 4th and then a late night data dump on Friday of a waiver list, which was involved with the subpoena issue going on between the Senate and the House, it was really frustrating to see the 6,100 businesses across many different types of industries, including many that we've been fighting to open all along that the governor claims he was going to veto, were given waivers or got their waivers revoked the day they did the data dump. So all along, as we see the economic impact, which is impacting people's livelihoods in many different ways, people who have never seen a paycheck in the last 7 or 8 weeks because of the issues of unemployment compensation, for us, it was really about a matter of trust. If we can trust all these, the governor-designated life essential entities and the 6,100 different entities across the multiple industries, be able to do the right thing, operate safely. Just give you one big example. I hear from constituents all the time, you see hundreds of people, packed parking lots at Costco, at Lowe's,
you know, lines out the door with people standing every 6 feet, yet a small mom-and-pop operation in the southern end of Lancaster County that might be a garden center or some other type of business, they can't be trusted. That's not safer than putting all those people going to those areas. So a lot of this came into play, and quite frankly, we're just not getting the answers that we're used to. Now, officially, reading the letter, we did request the governor to move us there, and that we are prepared to move there moving forward.
Okay, so that establishes the reasons for the move to yellow. A lot of questions surrounding this. I've actually gotten one from a listener right off the bat, but you said that there are a lot of partnerships in Lancaster County. But what I understand is that there were no healthcare professionals. Hospitals weren't consulted before the county decided to make this move. Does that make a lot of sense?
Well, Scott, we get data from the hospitals, from all three of the ones in Lancaster County on a daily basis. We get the utilization of hospital beds, how many exact people are on ventilators versus what their capacity is, how many are ICU. We see that every single day. And that has been the impact on that capacity has not been high.
Senator, I guess the reason I'm asking that question is, are you as elected officials in a position to make those decisions? One of the questions from a listener is this decision based on science or just a gut that it is time to open up and we don't know enough about from the administration, so we're deciding to go ahead with this?
Well, based on science, and we're actually having another hearing on that today, we're talking about the ability for people to be able to operate with CDC guidelines. We've clearly have a system in place that has been picking winners and losers in that, even with direct competitors in the same industry. That's what's definitely absolutely part of this. Remember, the goal from the very onset was flattening the curve. And the people of Pennsylvania have absolutely done an amazing job of flattening that curve to prevent the spike and impact that's occurring in our hospital systems. That was the goal that was laid out before us. And now with what people call how the new way of we're supposed to do things and the recommendations that I think we're all getting more familiar with in terms of wearing masks and other related things, that is something that I think more people can put into play, because quite frankly, we're creating a scenario with every 1% increase in unemployment we've had in Pennsylvania, there's a correlating 3.3% increase in overdose deaths. There's a 1% increase in suicide. We have places that have had more of an impact with that than they've had with COVID-19. With the people who have literally lost their entire livelihood, hasn't seen an ounce of support from an unemployment system or the emergency programs created, and literally making announcements on a daily basis that they'll never open again. They can't.
But
so
Senator,
there's other considerations to that too.
The thing is that, those statistics, and I don't doubt them. Yesterday we talked to two coroners who said that they have seen an increase in overdose deaths and a slight increase in suicides. But it seems as though you're having to make decisions weigh one against the other. Let me move on just a little bit. We'll be talking a lot about Governor Wolf today after his extraordinary press conference yesterday. Let's hear one thing the governor had to say at that press conference.
It also comes down to the moral imperative that every Pennsylvanian has in trying to work together to fight this virus. We're all in this together. And if one of us deserts the cause, we're not only hurting ourselves, we're hurting everybody else in Pennsylvania.
Now, let me just follow up on that, Senator, by saying that you in Lancaster County and several other counties that plan to move to yellow, the point that he was bringing up during that press conference was that by the stay-at-home orders, that the healthcare systems weren't overwhelmed, the curve was flattened because of the stay-at-home orders, and that opening now could result in more people getting sick, going to the hospital, businesses being hurt in the long run. In other words, rather than that flattening the curve, we see a W with increased cases. What do you say to that?
Well, if anyone's taken the time to evaluate the waiver list that he was granting, I find it hard to reconcile what he just said with the list that he's provided. How do you responsibly look people in the face? And I'll give you an example where he was so animate that we couldn't have garden centers open, right, because of how dangerous it would be, even though we kept the big box ones open for a while, telling us he was going to veto those efforts at their most critical part of their livelihoods this time of year, and then to come to find out that they were given waivers to some across the state all along. Or how about real estate? Or how about photography? He has conflicted himself in where he's given waivers and where he has not. And that is what the people of Pennsylvania, if they truly saw, and it's not as if the legislature, nursing homes, the business community haven't been begging him to be collaborative and all along to establish more consistency in how they do things. I'll be the first to tell you, Scott, that there is no one that I know in my county that's saying we want to open up full bore right away and just, you know, let it go where it goes. Everyone wants to keep our eyes on two goals. It's protecting the most vulnerable amongst us from exposure, which has not been done, especially in our nursing homes, while without destroying livelihoods. There's no reason why there are entities that were in that yellow phase, which are in my county, that got waivers. Why could they still be trusted to do things responsibly for the sake of their livelihood and putting food on their children's plates, but then the others couldn't?
Let me bring up, I said earlier that it seems as though in some people's minds this is an either-or situation. And some people have put it as simple as that Republicans, because is it almost all counties, all these counties that have decided to go yellow have Republican majorities as their commissioners and most of the legislators, that this has become a political issue, that Republicans care more about the economy, opening up the economy, than they do the health of the people. What do you say to that?
I would disagree with that. I think people, it's an easy response for people to say it's a partisan attack, you know, whether it was, you know, us pushing for the right to know request and more transparency. But if people do their research, Senator Lisa Bascola, Senator Andy Dinneman, the Delaware County Council, Democratic Delaware County Council, the Democrat-controlled board of Bucks County, they're asking these same kind of questions and sending letters to the governor. The bills I've been working on for real estate, for garden centers, things of that nature, I was the co-prime sponsor on each. There was four of us, two Republicans, two Democrats. And so I'd encourage people, listen, I'm trying to help people, whether they've lost, they're having issues with unemployment. I'm helping people who are Republicans and Democrats, small business owners pointing, saying, why is my competitor open with all his safety precautions and I'm not? They're Republicans and Democrats. The people in the nursing homes who have been severely let down throughout this, who we've been begging when they couldn't get answers and were coming to me and I couldn't get answers and responses from the administration on what their needs were, they're Republicans and Democrats too. I would encourage people to put the partisanships aside, because it's not. So many things are being worked on locally. Schuylkill County, though they're the Republican-controlled commissioners put out something, their Democrats signed it as well as their Democratic state rep. The Southwest, same thing. Pam Snyder, state representative, was just absolutely upset and put out press releases about how upset she was.
Let me interrupt for just one moment, though.
Sure.
Because we can point out all kinds of different scenarios, and you know, all the things that you've just said are accurate as far as Democrats in some of those counties. But none of those counties have decided to move from red to yellow. I'll point that out. But County Commissioner Gary Eichelberger of Cumberland County, a Republican, initially Cumberland County was looking into moving to yellow. They decided against it. A quote from Commissioner Eichelberger, he says, the problem is an increasingly politicized narrative that assumes one must either completely agree with Wolf's performance or else want to buck him just for the sake of being defiant with no nuance allowed. He says it's become a political food fight. Your response to that?
No, I don't disagree. I will be the first to say, in the very beginning of this, when there were so many unknowns and you had modeling that showed something tremendously worse, the governor and everyone, you know, were doing everything they can to do what that goal was in flattening the curve and attempt to keep people safe. I will not fault him for that whatsoever. However, along the way, when the data starts to come in behind that modeling and shows that the modeling was way off in terms of what the potential impact would be, and along the way, the lack of transparency, I don't think that's a partisan issue, whether it's Republican, Democrats, or whether it's the media or the general public. That's an issue we're all concerned about.
Yeah, that transparency. I mean, the governor has been criticized even by the media for lack of transparency. I will add
And it's important because, you know, we are on the ground in our communities listening to what the concerns are. And the transparency is also about getting answers. It's to know the framework. And that transparency helps hold a system accountable to be fair to all involved. And when you don't have that, that in itself, the ripple effect of the unknown, it really drives the angst of the discussion, which I believe leads to that perceived politicization of this problem as well. But it would have been helpful along the way to have that.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. Our guest during this portion of the program is Republican State Senator Scott Martin from Lancaster County. We're talking about Lancaster County and several other counties that have decided to defy the governor's orders and move from the red to the yellow stage during the coronavirus pandemic. If you have a question or comment, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, the phone number 1-800-729-7532. A listener asked, Nathaniel says, Senator, what is the end game for dealing with the pandemic? Containment and isolation or herd immunity?
Well, if you're asking me, do I think the virus can be stopped? I don't think that's possible to stop it. You can slow it up and slow its spread. You know, back in my days as a commissioner, I remember the novel H1N1, which was the swine flu. A lot of folks are surprised to find out there were 62 million positive infections from that. And I think about close to 20,000 deaths, a quarter million hospitalizations. But in the end, I think our goals should be protecting our vulnerable and those with underlying health conditions. We address the needs of employees so they don't have to choose between my job and my health condition. That's a very smart way for us to start focusing our efforts. But at the same time, you know, the economy plays other parts that impact lives. And as much as I hear it's about profits over people, no, the economy is attached to so much more in terms of livelihoods and health and socialization. I'll point to one huge thing, Scott. You recall that when part of this shutdown, they actually shut down what's known to be elective procedures. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Hospitals? Mm-hmm. Off the surface, people say, well, why should we care about mole removals? No, it's not just mole removals. It's about your grandfather getting diagnosed at a certain stage of cancer, a heart arrhythmia or irregular beat. And what does that mean? Oh, my goodness, he's moments away from a heart attack. There's so many things that go into that. And when we shut those hospitals down, $2 billion of lost revenue in 1 month. And people, that's not just like profit. That's also paying all the nurses and doctors. We had hospital systems here that really, their system was starting to collapse. They were almost empty except for a few of, you know, emergency situations or COVID patients. So they've decided now to reverse course and open those up. There's a ripple effect to certain aspect of the economy that you have to know directly impacts people's lives, not just their livelihoods. There are health outcomes associated with that. So I think the end game is protecting the most vulnerable and those with underlying conditions. As we move forward, we got to continue to take the general precautions to slow spread and not expose people, and you know, put in those CDC guidelines and the social distancing. But if we can trust certain elements of our society to do that, right, including sometimes your direct competitor, we should be able to trust other people to do things responsibly as well.
And we only have a few minutes left, Senator, and there's so much I'd like to get to. I have a letter, or excuse me, an email from a listener. This listener is actually in York County, which is another county considering making the move to yellow. But this listener says they are short-sighted to believe that it is safe to resume normal operations. They are discounting the threat to every citizen, now she says of York County, but we can say of all the counties that are considering moving to yellow, and the strain on our medical facilities. If they want to risk their own lives, that's one thing, and I suppose they have the right to endanger their lives. But this decision does not affect just them. It puts the lives of all county residents in jeopardy. I urge them to hold off a bit longer until the guidelines developed by medical professionals are attained. And, you know, that is one of the criticisms we hear of this senator, is that it is, you are putting people's lives in danger. I mean, you have no way how to know how your constituents feel in Lancaster County about this, what the percentage is. So there's a decision being made here that could put people's lives in jeopardy.
No, I appreciate that, and I can tell you that I hear from my constituents nonstop, without question, in every format. Any insinuation that our local officials who oversee things like emergency management aren't in contact with our health systems, and I will say our health systems are, in knowing their capacity and where they stand, is something that is commonplace in what we do. Now, I can't speak for every county and what they have a setup, but traditionally in any emergency, Scott, you can name whatever emergency you want. The counties are always the focal point and have been. And plans to implement based on the local conditions are better done. And anyone who thinks that Harrisburg can better implement a plan than the locals, I will tell them they're wrong. And if there's any better scenario that I can point out to is, and you referenced it earlier in your program, is look at what happened with their nursing home plan.
Yeah, we'll be talking about that in a few minutes, yeah.
And think about that. Do you know that the nursing homes are a huge focal point when the counties are running things like they do in every emergency? Let's say TMI had a meltdown. We have plans in place on how to administer K2, how to evacuate if we need to, and deal with the residents and handle them safely. And right now already, and there's a plan being voted on, I believe, tomorrow, Wednesday, in Lancaster County, where they're talking about where they've laid out how they're going to break down that $95 million. Nursing homes are a huge component for all the support they're going to get as part of that plan. That's not being driven by Harrisburg. That's being driven by the county. The plan, the resources, things that people don't see on the surface because everyone's focused on what the governor's doing or not doing. So I just wanted to add that.
Barbara from Lancaster, probably one of your constituents, says the U.S. Supreme Court has ruled the governor has the responsibility to close. What they ruled is that he's not overstepping his bounds by these stay-at-home orders. Why does Senator Martin believe he is above the law, or the county is above the law?
Well, I don't believe that anyone thinks it's above the law. Is that the people in our county are directly connected to all those who are directly hurting and what the conditions on the ground are. I will say this, and this is going to be a longer discussion that goes on. The emergency laws that are put into place in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, Scott, were designed for 3 days, 4 days, maybe 7 days at the most, when you have the tropical storm Lee or you have a blizzard or things of that nature. The laws were never geared towards this long-term type of emergency. We already wrestled with the governor a little bit over it in terms of his use of some of these powers during his opioid emergency he declared. But the problem is, to make changes to that, you need a governor to sign that. If you notice, we actually, with Senate Bill 841, we had to go and change laws for even the locals in how they can operate and do things during this type of emergency because it's different. The governor, and this will be a point of discussion moving forward, is taking the liberty to point to things that the powers he would have over a short period, a burst of time during what the 99% of the types of emergencies we have, to make sweeping changes and to do things that no one ever thought would be possible. This is a whole new territory. I'm sure it's going to be argued out a long time, the constitutionality of a lot of this stuff as well. There's going to be ongoing discussions of this, but more to come on that topic. But just think, we had to change the laws in order to accommodate local governments to be able to operate on a longer type of emergency. We just can't do that with the current administration.
Senator, we've gotten a number of emails from listeners pointing out that when you said earlier about some counties that feel that they've met the threshold of the governor and should be able to move to yellow. Your county in particular is one, 13 deaths in your county. But Lancaster County has many, many more in the hundreds of deaths. So we talked a few weeks ago about you criticized the governor for including Lancaster County in the Southeast region, but mm-hmm. Lancaster County has deaths on par with some of those southeastern counties. So have you reached that point in Lancaster County where you're ready to open, or when I say open, move to yellow?
Well, and I'll answer that directly. Lancaster County is very intensive with retirement communities and nursing homes. So are the more densely portioned populations in the Southeast. 90%, over 90, and this is according to our coroner, of deaths in Lancaster County have occurred in nursing homes, or they died in hospitals after being brought there from the long-term care living facility or the hospitals.
But there's still deaths.
To that, they are still deaths, absolutely. But at the same token, where was the plan being implemented to protect the most vulnerable? That we know where our resources need to go in order to protect those folks and implement the practices needed to protect them, while the rest of the community at the same time cannot do things safely and move forward. That is the crux of this conversation. Most of our deaths have occurred there. That doesn't mean that's not significant or it doesn't mean anything to anybody, but that's why we've been screaming for 8 weeks over for help in those areas. That's what sets Lancaster County apart from a lot of other counties, is how intensive we are in those things. And we need to do a better job. The administration needs to also do a better job of protecting them, though I believe that the locals can do a much better job, and they have the money now to do that.
One final question, Senator. I'm sure we could go on the entire hour because there's so much to talk about. But the governor said there could be repercussions, loss of money from the state for counties that decide to do this, businesses losing their occupancy or liquor licenses, or not able to get insurance because they broke the law. Now, that could put many people's livelihoods in jeopardy as well. Does that have an influence on this decision, or does Lancaster County, I'll get it, you're not the county commissioner any longer, but does Lancaster County still have plans to move ahead with moving to yellow?
Well, I don't know exactly what funding he was threatening from first and foremost. I will tell you that he does not have the power with the monies that were directly given to the counties to be able to put any other stipulations on that. Second, was he referring to human service funding? Is his threat, where we actually do those services on behalf of the state for child welfare, for mental health related services or developmental disabilities, for drug and alcohol, for Office of Aging? Is that the funding? Because that's the funding, most of it, that we do get from the state. Is that what he's threatening? I don't think that helps those that are the most vulnerable or in the most need. There will be discussion on what the ramifications are of him in terms of putting out the things about insurance. I'm hoping that we can talk to the insurance companies to find out exactly where they stand on that. That's going to be an ongoing discussion. But to think about the fact that, why wasn't he threatening the ones that were licensed that he gave waivers to? Is anyone going to ask him that question? And there were plenty of them, and I encourage everyone to look at their list. And as we get into the the more the weeds of getting him to release the information that many folks have been asking for across the Commonwealth to find out. It kind of rings hollow to make threats against entities that he picked winners and losers of. So that'll be an ongoing debate as well.
Republican State Senator Scott Martin of Lancaster County. Like I said, so much more to talk about. We got very many emails. We'll try to get to post some of those as well. But, Senator, thank you very much for being with us today.
Oh, anytime, Scott. It's always a pleasure.
All right. I want to talk more about those repercussions. Governor Wolf said yesterday that there could be repercussions for counties that don't follow the governor's orders and that those repercussions could be significant. Senator Martin just touched on a few of them right now. Attorney David Mueller of the Mechanicsburg law firm Colgan & Associates wrote a column about some of those repercussions yesterday. David Mueller, welcome to the program.
Morning, Scott. Pleasure to be here.
Hey, I'm curious. You probably just heard what Senator Martin said about questioning the money that the governor said that he was going to hold back on, and also ask about some of the repercussions for those that have been granted waivers. Does he have a point?
Well, Scott, I think at this point what probably your listeners and most of the people on the ground are probably most concerned about is what risks do both counties and businesses bear in exposure to what happens if they do open up. I think that right now, obviously, any threatened consequences by the governor or anybody else is almost certainly going to be subject to immediate litigation, and the courts are going to be very, very busy, as they have been, determining what powers any political entity has to enforce those provisions. But right now, I think what most people on the ground are probably most concerned about is that, you know, if these, as we watch this political football going back and forth between these various political authorities, you know, for someone who is on the ground in Lancaster County or is on the ground in York County, the questions that we're getting from our clients is, what do we make of this going forward? What am I to do if I'm a business owner or a constituent of one of these counties? What am I to make of this, and what is the reality on the ground as to what is going to happen? And that's what we're focusing on at the moment. You know, certainly Governor Wolf at this point has made a statement yesterday that it looks like he plans to enforce his authority or his perceived authority against the counties in two ways. The first would be what we call the power of the purse. You know, that Governor Wolf has indicated that he believes that he has some authority to direct state funding, including the roughly $4 billion in CARES Act funding that the state has received for distribution to around the Commonwealth. And also, he believes that with the regulatory authority that he has among his various state agencies, that he can exert some authority to bring about repercussions to both counties and businesses who act in contravention of his order. And at this point, I think while it's a little bit uncertain how the courts would come down on that, and maybe a little bit uncertain what the ultimate conclusion of that will be, you know, I think right now those are the risks that are on the ground for people and politicians to make in deciding how to move forward.
All right, let's talk about some specifics. The governor said that there are businesses that could lose their occupancy licenses or liquor licenses, that is, a restaurant or a bar. Now, those are two areas in which the state does have some jurisdiction. And I don't even know if it would, I mean, there may be people who go to court, but those seem to be two areas that would be pretty cut and dry that the governor, or excuse me, that the state could have some jurisdiction and say, we're going to take that license away because you broke the law.
Absolutely, Scott. And, you know, again, I think as we're addressing your audience, who may include, you know, business owners who are deciding what to do, you know, we may take, for example, a particular business owner that may be deciding how to move forward. You know, let's just imagine a scenario where a hair and nail salon owner in Lancaster County is making the decision right now, in light of what they're hearing from their county commissioners and in light of what they're hearing from their district attorney about moving to yellow and non-enforcement. You know, what are some of the risks that they need to consider? You know, certainly every business owner is going to be making a personal decision on how to move forward, but what are some of the risks that they need to consider in moving forward? And using that example specifically, the first thing that we would note is that it is not entirely clear at this point that any business that reopens is completely free of possible criminal liability. Particularly if you take our example of the hair and nail salon owner in Lancaster County.
Okay, wait, can I interrupt for just what did you say? Criminal liability?
Well, and what I mean by that is that, you know, the governor's office has certainly taken the position that the emergency orders are enforceable criminally by summary violation or otherwise. Now, we are aware that the district attorneys of various counties have issued opinions stating that, or not opinions, but issued letters stating in no uncertain terms that they will not be enforcing those criminal provisions. What I think business owners need to be aware of is that there's a concurrent authority there. You know, the state attorney general's office, albeit on a very limited basis, and by and through the police power of the Pennsylvania State Police, who have unlimited statewide jurisdiction, have the ability through various means to enforce, if they so choose, to enforce the criminal provisions of this law, or to enforce the criminal provisions of this order. What I would be concerned about, or we'd be concerned about advising our clients about, is that there may be a risk, albeit low, that they could still face criminal prosecution for opening their doors at this point. At this point, I don't believe we have any guidance from the Attorney General as to whether or not, you know, they would have an appetite for that, or whether or not there's any particular movement in that direction. But we did see some communications yesterday from the Attorney General, you know, reminding folks of his position that, you know, the governor's orders are still legally enforceable. So we do need to, you know, we do need to consider that as a possible risk. You know, going back to our example of the hair and nail salon owner who opens up in Lancaster County, that is a possible risk that they could face.
Now, the governor seemed to indicate yesterday that was not something he wanted to do, was to move criminally. But as you point out, that is a possibility. There always is the potential there, even though local district attorneys, prosecutors say they won't prosecute. The attorney general could do that. One final question, though, and this has to do with insurance. The insurance commissioner came out and said that, and Governor Wolf said this as well, that businesses are risking their insurance, that they wouldn't be able to get insurance because they broke the law. Tell me about that.
Well, what we're advising our clients at this point is that would be a conversation that every business needs to make sure that they have with their insurer before they make any decision to move forward. Again, as of right now, the position of the governor's office and to some extent, as it's been litigated, the position of the state Supreme Court is that, you know, there is an enforceable order preventing certain businesses in red counties from opening. Many insurance contracts contain provisions that they do not cover liability in the event of violation of law by the covered entity. And so what we would be concerned about, or one thing that we would be advising our clients to be very aware of at this point, is that if you do open and your insurance company deems your opening to be in violation of the governor's order, and there is some liability that flows from that, and we do have to be aware that, you know, we are certainly expecting, you know, given the litigious society that we live in, we are certainly expecting that there will be litigation to follow, you know, involving employees who get sick, customers who get sick, you know, that there will be personal injury lawsuits to follow this. I think every business owner needs to be aware that if they do open their doors, they need to be very sure that if some liability befalls them, or if some, you know, claim is raised against them in court, that their insurer is going to be willing to cover that liability. And certainly, you know, that's not something that we can address for every one of your listeners, but we would say that any business that's considering doing that needs to have a very careful conversation with, you know, their attorney and their insurance company to make sure that they're not opening themselves up to unexpected liability.
Attorney David Muller of the Mechanicsburg law firm Colgan & Associates. Mr. Muller, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Scott. It was great to be here.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. Just want to point out that going back to earlier in the program when Senator Scott Martin was on the show, we received a lot of emails, many more emails than what we normally would receive. We will post those so you could weigh in. We have people listening who both support the counties that are moving to the yellow phase and oppose, and those who have questions. We will post those on our website, WITF.org. Moving on now, Spotlight PA reported that Pennsylvania had a robust and aggressive plan ready to protect the state's nursing homes but failed to enact it. Critics of the Department of Health's coronavirus response say this is why nearly 70% of COVID-19 deaths have been in nursing homes and private care homes. They also say that had officials used their first and more aggressive plan, state facilities would be in much better shape today. Joining us is one of the reporters for that story, Spotlight PA reporter Aneri Patani. Aneri Patani, good to have you back on the show.
Thanks for having me, Scott.
I wish we had more time, as you could probably tell. We had a lot of...
There's so much to discuss.
I know. Describe this aggressive plan the state had for nursing homes.
Yeah, so from the documents that show this plan, right, it seems like they basically had a strike team, for, you know, a way of phrasing it, that would be made up of epidemiologists, nurses, emergency management personnel, medical experts, and basically when a facility, a nursing home called and said, you know, we have a handful of cases or we have a case, we're concerned, this team could respond on site to the facility within 6 hours for a call for help. And they had a list of basically 12 different things they would do there, which included everything from training the staff on infection prevention, providing personal protective gear, helping identify places where you could, you know, seclude sick patients from well patients to avoid spreading the virus further. They could help, you know, gather information to do contact tracing on visitors and staff, figure out plans to put in place for when staff are out sick. Just a lot of things that we're now seeing the state scrambles do. This was the plan that the team could respond on site to the facility and help the facility kind of prepare for all of these various factors.
So why wasn't it implemented?
To be quite honest, I'm not entirely sure. I mean, I know from, you know, we obtained emails that shows that the plan was circulated within the Department of Health and that, you know, members of the staff were asked to volunteer for these teams. I know that the plan was distributed to provider organizations like the Pennsylvania Healthcare Association that represents several hundred nursing home and assisted living facilities. And so it seems that, you know, it was in the works. But, you know, when I talked to the Department of Health press office, they told me the plan never made it to their office. They didn't know about these, what they were officially called, quick response teams. So it's somewhat unclear as to why it didn't happen. The providers say, you know, perhaps there were too many cases too soon and the department wasn't prepared for the amount of staffing they would need to have to make these teams effective and to be able to respond to all the facilities who are asking for help. But from the Department of Health, I haven't had a clear answer on that.
Now, when you contacted the Department of Health, a spokesperson said that many of these plans have been implemented, but they were implemented in mid-April, a month and a half after the pandemic started here in Pennsylvania. Is that correct? Can you tell me more about that?
Yeah, so when we reached out to the Department of Health, you know, their communications director said to me, you know, I don't know exactly about these quick response teams. I'm not quite sure we ever had anything by that name, but the issues you're explaining here the responses are happening. You know, she said to me, we have infection prevention consultants, both staff members from the Department of Health, as well as a company they've contracted with called ECRI, calling facilities to provide advice on, you know, how do you put on and take off protective gear without spreading the virus? How do you separate sick patients from well patients? They said, you know, we have on the ground response, which is the National Guard. But then, you know, as I started looking into that, the National Guard told me, you know, they first started responding to a handful of facilities in early April when, you know, there were a few places that had just a large number of staff out sick. And then even for them, you know, as the calls for help started growing, they had to put together an assessment team, which sounds very similar to the original strike team plan. Basically, the National Guard has a team of people along with one representative from the Department of Health who visit these facilities and on site and try to determine what their needs are and if, you know, the National Guard needs to be there in person, if they can, you know, just help hire staff through an outside company, or what can be done. And so it sort of seems like at this point they have, you know, done a modified version of that quick team response, but it's, you know, significantly later than those original plans were being circulated in mid-March.
Did you talk to people for your story who said that this would have made a difference in the number of people getting sick and maybe even dying?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, advocates, ombudsman offices who are, people who advocate on behalf of patients and typically go into these facilities and visit them, provider associations for the nursing homes, they all said, look, we knew this was always going to hit nursing homes hard, and, it is difficult. You have a large number of people with pre-existing health conditions living in close quarters, but it didn't have to be this bad. Several of them said, we saw what happened in Washington. The very first outbreak in the U.S. was a nursing facility. And so since then, they had been reaching out to the Department of Health, to the governor's office, saying, what are we doing about this? How are we preparing? And while the, both the governor's office and the Department of Health did respond to some of their requests, I think a lot of the places feel like it wasn't enough. And, had we been more prepared, they told me it could have looked different today.
Aneri, what is ECRI and what role do they play in the state's response?
Yes. So ECRI, as the company is called, is a patient safety and healthcare research company based in the just outside of the Philadelphia area. And the state has entered $1 million contract with them in order for them to do consulting for nursing homes and assisted living facilities on how to prevent the spread of infection. During press conferences or generally when they're talking about the response, Secretary Levine has often said, we're having ECRI work with this nursing home or, we're calling on them to do more work. So I called ECRI and tried to figure out what they're doing. Basically, it sounds like they told me they have 6 nurses who are trained in infection prevention. And when the Department of Health sends a facility their way and says, this facility requires extra help, ECRI, one of the 6 nurses from ECRI will call that facility and basically ask them questions about how are they separating sick and well residents, how are they putting on and removing personal protective gear, and basically try to figure out what they might be doing improperly and guide them on how to do it better. And then they basically continue the phone calls for several weeks. That being said, the providers are saying a phone call is really not what they need at this point. They need more on-the-ground support. They need more equipment. And from an advocate standpoint, right, talking to the ombudsman group and others who are looking out for the residents, a phone call is not going to show improper care or treatment or harm to residents that might be happening inside the closed facilities. No one is really getting a look at what's happening inside there.
So not even any video?
No. So ECRI actually told me that they offered to send iPhones to the facilities to do video consultations so they could do sort of a virtual walkthrough. But the health department told them that they preferred phone calls.
So, and I misspoke. When it is ECRI, I was thinking that those letters stood for electronic, because it is an electronic monitoring situation. What's happening in other states? How is this different? Pennsylvania done differently than what some other states have done?
Yeah, so, in several states, let's talk about Maryland, West Virginia, Wisconsin, Massachusetts, and Tennessee, at least that I know of, that have committed to testing all long-term care residents and staff. And advocates and public health experts say that's really important because right now we don't know who has the virus or is carrying it. And by the time it spreads and people show symptoms, it's already spread to so many individuals that it becomes hard to control. By contrast, if you can test staff who are coming in, individuals who have the virus, you stop them at the door and you stop the spread. Also in Maryland and Massachusetts, their health departments have put together strike teams that can, go in and help facilities that are understaffed, where people are out sick, that are having issues with infection control. So this would probably be similar to what the National Guard is doing now, but they've just, been doing it earlier and sort of at a more widespread level.
Aneri, we only have a minute or so left. One thing I wanted to point out is that there has been some frustration from families of who have loved ones in long-term care facilities that the State Department of Health is not releasing data, and they're citing privacy reasons. They're releasing some data, but not all. What's the thinking behind that?
Yeah, so the state is saying that this is a privacy issue, but, you know, families, my colleague Rebecca Moss, who worked on the story with me, talked to several families, right, where they're being told, they're calling the facility repeatedly, checking, you know, are there any cases, is there anything I should be worried about, and they're being told, no, it's all fine, like, don't worry, we have it under control, and then suddenly their loved one is sick or in the hospital or, you know, in some cases it has passed away. So they're not finding out until it's way too late. So there's clearly an issue with transparency. And I know Secretary Levine has said they are considering releasing data by facility to show how many cases are at each facility. And, you know, I know a lot of advocates, a lot of family members are really hoping for that information so they can make an informed decision about their loved one's care.
Spotlight PA reporter Neri Pattani, thank you very much for being with us.